Cape Talk, Inspiration Wednesdays.
Now, as we continue to mark the 16 days of activism on violence against women, my next guest is someone who knows all too well what that concept means in reality. In 2012, she survived an absolutely horrific attack, which could easily have killed her, certainly has changed her life forever. But she has found the strength to not only survive, but reach out to others to help them cope in the face of similar violence. I have already mentioned, and I'm going to say it once more, I know that schools have broken up early this week for many people. That means there may be children listening in the car right now. Please, the next 15, 20 minutes or so is really not suitable content for younger listeners. So if you do have younger children in the car, please do change the channel just for now or tune out for the time being, and you can listen to the podcast after the show. Thank you so much. With that, a very warm welcome to author Lily Reed. The book is called The Dark Seed. And Lily, it's a very difficult book to read, but I think such an important one. Thanks for coming in to share it with us.
Thanks, Pippa, and hello to all your listeners today.
I want, and I think you feel the same way, to dispense with the story at the heart of the story and then move on to what happened after. So to summarize in a huge, to a huge extent, you set off in 2011, 2012 on a road trip with your six-year-old daughter, determined to drive from South Africa to Malawi and start a new life there. And you made your way through 3,000 kilometers of road and roadblocks and bribes. It's a highly entertaining series of chapters, those ones. You got to Malawi, you became involved in a new relationship there, and you found yourself in Lilongwe, living there. Tell us what happened that fateful night where everything changed.
Yeah, well, like as you said, Pippa, you know, the story is quite dark, but it comes out very light at the end and full of hope. Basically, in a nutshell, what happened is that the house was invaded by 15 men, and I was raped and tortured by 12 of them. The kids were there to see it. My partner's nine-year-old son was there. My six-year-old daughter was there to witness it all. My partner had left for that night. Mm. And it just went from bad to worse. I was hit in the head with an axe. My arm was broken. My ribs were broken. I contracted five different strains of HPV, the human papillomavirus, and all of those were the cancer-causing type. There are over 40 of them, but sure. I got all five, lucky me, that gives you cervical cancer. I also fell pregnant, and I wasn't quite sure if the baby was from the rapist or from my partner. It was from my partner in the end, but because of all the ARVs and everything that I was on, I actually lost that baby the year after. So it was an absolute tragedy what happened, but I've come out of it so strong. I've learned so much about myself. I've learned so much about the power of the human spirit and determination and keeping your hopes up and seeing that silver lining. And I just wanted to share it with the world, you know, that there is that light at the end of the tunnel, and it doesn't have to destroy you. And it's all about your mindset and what you take from that experience. I was very conscious from the moment it started, the night started, that forgiveness was going to be key. You know, I looked at these men as boys, and I thought, what on earth has caused these men who were boys once to get collectively together and hurt another person so much? And in that moment, I knew I had to just forgive them as the boys they were. And I let go, you know, I let go of all that fear, and I just wanted to obviously make sure that the children were okay. And I think because I forgave, I didn't look back and get angry or resentment. It just disappeared. And instantly, as you read in the book, instantly I was just moved to help other women. You know, I looked around in Malawi just seeing, you know, I went there educated, knowing my rights, being an activist naturally anyway, and I still couldn't get the help that I needed. I was rejected by three hospitals. The police weren't very helpful. The court was just an absolute trauma. So, you know, and I know women go through this every day in South Africa. I've been working in the industry for a long time, and I just took it upon myself to make this my calling, and do whatever I can to help other victims, you know, get to the kind of warrior status that I feel I am in now.
It's extraordinary. I mean, to read the book, to read how clear your thinking was that night is what really struck me, because I know you came at this with a background in psychology and you had actually been involved in, before this happened to you, in counseling rape survivors before. But your thinking was so clear, and the way you described that night, the level of detail that you remember, obviously the horror of it etched into your mind forever. But what struck me is how clearly you were thinking about, how do I keep the children safe? How do I minimize what they see of this? Where do I go when this ends? It showed a level of clarity that I think many women would not have had. I mean, this experience would have broken many women. Do you think it was your background in counseling that helped you think that way that night?
You know, I think it's a combination of my education and my experience, and then also the way that I was brought up. You know, we come from really tough stock. Thanks, Mom. And, you know, we've traveled a lot and we've been in many different African countries, kind of having to get up and go, get up and go. I was always the new kid in class. I went to like 9 different schools, but before I hit standard 5. So I'm always one to think on my feet, and I'm always one to react very calmly in a crisis situation. So I think that really helped me a lot. And also that, because I knew my rights. I knew what was going to happen. You know, you see it around you every day. You know what's about to happen. And it was really, I think, the kids that brought me through. If the kids weren't there, I might have given up a lot earlier. But I just had to get those kids out and make sure that they survived.
Yeah. Did you have moments that night when you thought you wouldn't survive the night?
Yeah. There was the moment when I got hit in the head with an axe. That's when everything became very, very bright, and I started thinking very clearly, and I knew I only had a little bit of time to make sure that the kids were okay. So that was one very clear moment. And then I just was thinking, you know, I'm going to die now. Let's get this done and get the kids safe. And then the next moment where I actually gave up was at the very end, when the military police arrived after I sent out a call for help, and they were coming down the passageway. I was in a bedroom and I'd hidden the kids underneath the bed, and I thought it was the attackers coming down. So I turned around and there was another man standing in the room, which I didn't realize at the time was the chef who'd been hiding in the cupboard, and I just felt trapped, and I just dropped onto the floor, and that was the end. I knew I couldn't fight all of these men. So luckily it was
help
of the
coming
night
down the corridor, not more harm.
That's it.
But of course it wasn't the end of the story, and as you've referenced, I mean, to read the description of what you went through in the hours and days following, I've done many interviews with rape survivors who've spoken about the lack of dignity and the lack of compassion when they've been reporting to police, when they've arrived at hospitals. But to read what you went through, Lily, was excruciating, because it was doctors turning you away saying, I don't want to look at you, because if I do, I'm going to have to come to court and testify, and I don't want the bother. You're standing there in a T-shirt and nothing else, and somebody, that's their response, is that this is too much bother.
That's it.
And then for you to go into court and find yourself standing in a tiny room with the men accused of doing this to you, standing right next to you, and to then have them say, the court say, they will now cross-examine you. Did you know that that was coming?
No, not at all. You know, it's, you know, we stood outside under a tree, you know, kind of waiting, not quite sure where to go. And I was just called into this room, and they were standing not even half a meter away from me. And I had to look each of them in the face and then get cross-examined. I had nobody standing up for me. I didn't have a lawyer or a prosecutor or anyone like that. And I had to present all my own evidence. I had to go the days before, go and take photographs and have them printed down at the shop so that I could show evidence. It was insane.
So you had to walk into a camera shop and say, please print this roll of film detailing my
everything.
Injuries.
And you know,
happened.
I hadn't seen the photographs. So of course, you know, looking at them step by step, I was reliving the attack, because there was the blood splatters on the walls. There was how they got into the house with rocks. There was a machete. There was a cloth that they'd used to gag me with, you know, full of blood and wire and stuff. So that was extremely difficult to go through that. But, you know, I just found something inside myself that just said, get it done. Just go and get it done. You've got to take these steps to get through. You don't have the support. It's fine. It's just you. You just tell your story. You speak your truth. And hopefully justice will prevail.
Did justice prevail? Do you even know what became of the case?
I have no idea. I did the court case. Well, I did the one day that I was there, and that was the last that I heard. You know, there's so much other things were going on, and I came back to South Africa and then returned back to Malawi again after the case, and we don't know what happened. Yeah.
If you've just joined us late to the conversation, my guest in studio is Lily Reed, who has written a book called The Dark Seed. describing not only the events of the night that she's been telling about us when she was so brutally attacked, but more importantly, the process of rebuilding a life after that. You've spoken about the clarity of thought, about your determination that you will survive this and you knew what to do next. But it's easy to say that and to know the steps. It's a lot harder to have to take them, Lily. You found yourself back in South Africa with literally the clothes on your back and your six-year-old daughter incredibly traumatized by what she must have seen that night. Mm. How do you even begin to piece together a life for yourself?
You know, I had to take it day by day. You know, I think the one thing that an attack like this does is that, especially in my case, is that all your dreams, your ambitions, everything that you've surrounded yourself with and your reality, it's just destroyed. So it's very difficult to feel assertive and ambitious and all of that. So I had to take it really a step at a time. Luckily, I could stay at my parents' house with my daughter. So in the beginning, it was just really, you know, getting the right medical attention, making sure her environment was as normalized as possible, and getting her back into school, seeing psychologists. You know, it was again just step by step. What do we need to do today? Today we need to eat. Today we need to get up and wash. Today I need to, you know, get my stitches out, whatever it was. And we just took it every day at a time.
She must be 10 or 11 years
old. She's 11 now.
11, okay. So I'm thinking, I can't help but think, and I thought throughout reading your book, I have a 13-year-old daughter. I'd like to say I can't imagine what was going through your head, but sadly I can. Any woman living in South Africa can imagine what was going through your head. Does it make you hyper fearful for Emma today as she stands on the cusp of her teen years, becoming a young woman, knowing the possibility and the very real possibility that it could happen to her?
I make an absolute point that my child does not fear the world. I don't want this to be her legacy. So we do anything and everything just the same as we did before. I push the boundaries all the time. I don't allow her to judge people or judge situations. She is a fearless warrior through all of this. And I don't fear for her, because I know even if it does happen, she's got my warrior heart. She's got my mind. And that is what I'm building for her. So I know she'll be able to cope with anything, God forbid, you know, that happens. We'll be there together.
That's an amazingly magnanimous approach to life, given what you've been through, Lily. I mean, I know you've got very involved in helping other rape survivors. You've teamed up with NGOs. You speak frequently about your experience. Is it a case of wanting to be there to give women what was denied you after the attack, to be that voice of dignity and compassion, because you know what it's like to be there with nobody?
Yeah, and you know, okay, that's part of it. But I also want to find a solution. And that is what kind of been my journey since releasing the book, is to look what is available already. We know where the gaps are. And even if we fill those gaps, there are hundreds of NGOs that are helping women in different ways, the counseling, the safe houses, all of that. But there's something missing. And I think I clued onto it the other day when I arrived back from Joburg. I had a book with me that I could give away, and I walked up to four men who were having a cigarette. And what, you know, it was a cleaner from the airport, somebody who drove the cars. There was a really, really tall, I think, Nigerian looking man there that kind of brought back some flashbacks. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to the heart of the problem here. And I walked up to them and I said, hey guys, can I have a conversation with you, please? We need to change the narrative of how men are speaking about and feeling and reacting to women across South Africa. It is them who are going to make the change. All of us women have support. We have places to go to. We know our rights. We know all of that stuff. But it's the men who are the perpetrators. So out of that four, if one in three women are raped in South Africa, how many of the men are rapists then? What are the statistics when you turn it around? You know, obviously men repeat rape in a lot of the cases. So I was just kind of averaging out. I don't know if these are the stats, but like say it's 1 in 10, you know.
Yeah.
I want to talk to those men. I want to see what's going on in their minds. I want to go face to face into the townships, and I want them to know Lily Reed's face. I want them to know the face of rape and what they do and what they destroy in a woman and a family and all the friends and support services around them. And I think that's the key. We need to really open up the conversations with these men. And out of those four men, one dropped his head in absolute shame. The other one was really engaging with me. The other one turned and walked away. he actually walked away. And the other one was kind of like looking at the group to see what the dynamics were about. And I found that absolutely fascinating. And that group of four, you know, there was a leader, there was followers, and there was one or two that might have had their own mindset about it. Mm. And it's those ones I want to speak to. They have to teach their sons about treating women like goddesses again, treating women with dignity. We have rights just as much as them, and we need the protection. So I'm thinking of starting something around there. I also wanted to give a little bit of news. Mm. I've opened up the Lily Reed Foundation, and it's a very proud moment for me because, you know, part of the whole journey up to Malawi was to start an NGO.
Yeah.
And I've worked in NGOs for so long and I haven't had one of my own. And so this is a very proud moment for me. Everything's registered. And the mandate really is to start conversations with men, but then also to support other NGOs who are already doing the work. So to fundraise and be a conduit, you know, where I can help them with their overhead costs, their operational costs, because these are the things that don't get covered. Mm. You know, program costs get covered, but overheads don't. And I was sitting, it was so lovely. I was sitting next to Josina Michelle, who's the stepdaughter of Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
And she's got an absolutely amazing program going. It's called the Kaluka Movement. And the model that she is using is so inspiring because it's actually a one-stop shop for any rape survivors or victims of gender-based violence, where the victim is dropped off at the space. And in that space is the doctor, is the policeman, is the nurse, is the place of safety, because the biggest problem is transport, consistency of counseling, you know, safe place to stay, all of those things that I couldn't get hold of, you know, and all those barriers to actually getting help. And so she's come up with this model where it's a drop center where you don't have to expose yourself to be, being re-traumatized.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be working with her.
That's
closely.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm very happy about that. And I just wanted to say, I know we're running out of time here, but I just wanted to say, you know, there's certain organizations out there that I'm supporting. One of them is Tears, and it's not Tears the Doggy Sanctuary that we know here in Cape Town. It's tears.co.za, and they are doing all the support services for rape. There's also Women Against Rape. Mm-hmm. It's war.co.za. They're working in Joburg and down here in Cape Town as well. And then, of course, Josina Michelle's, which I'll hopefully be working very closely with her. But just to show you that those dark seeds, as the book is called, that those rapists left behind, if you can just cultivate them into something beautiful, you know, if it inspires your activist heart, if it makes you go out and touch someone in a way, you know, that they know that you're there and supporting them, fantastic. Use it, you know. And you can't use it from a place of anger. You've got to use it from a place of forgiveness. And that also means forgiving yourself for being in a situation, for blaming yourself for, you know, being in the house at that time or wherever you were. Forgive yourself and you can forgive others, and then you're set free.
What an incredible story. And just to end, a WhatsApp in from Keenan, who's listening, saying, a very brave guest you are chatting to. It takes a lot for a woman to rise above such a trauma and to forgive the men who've done that to her, but more so to be an example to go out and help other women faced with similar situations. Continually in my prayers, says Keenan on the WhatsApp line. And I'm sure that's a sentiment shared by many people listening. Lily, thank you so much for joining us. And Lily has very graciously bought in 10 copies of the book for us to give away today. So if you would like to read it, and I know all of you listening right now do want to read it, send an SMS to 31567 with your name and your ID number and the words dark seed, and we'll call the first 10 people to send that SMS.
Fantastic.
Lily, it's wonderful news about your organization.
Thank
I'm
you.
So glad that dream has finally been realized.
Thank you
for joining us today, and our very best wishes go with you.
Absolute pleasure. Can I add last thing quickly before the news, is that if you need a copy of the book, it is around in Cape Town, but if you're outside of Cape Town, you need to email me at thedarkseedbook@gmail.com, and I'll get a signed copy to you.
Wonderful. Lily Reed, author of The Dark Sea.